This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee, along with my guy Brian Rowitz from ESPN West Palm. Once again, Jonathan Hood off this week. But again, don't worry. You can always catch Jay Hood Sunday morning, SiriusXM's Pro Wrestling Nation from 9 a.m. until noon Eastern time, as he will be giving all of his reactions to everything happening in the world of pro wrestling. And of course, this weekend, it was a busy one with Saturday night's main event. We also then had a really fun pay-per-view, shocking, right, with AEW's Double or Nothing out of New York. I had a friend, by the way, who texted me on Monday or Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday. With the holiday weekend, it's always tough to keep the day straight. I think it was Tuesday. Hey, I heard AEW Double or Nothing was really good. Like, is that what you think? I'm like, yeah, it was an AEW pay-per-view, man. Of course it's spectacular. Like, that's what they do. It's like the foundation of the company at this point. And that's where we start today, Brian. That's where we start today on GKW. Again, it just feels like AEW has been riding a wave of momentum. And when you take a look from a year ago or 2 years ago, it feels like the company once again, and you're going to have your ebbs and flows as a wrestling company, but it feels like AEW is on the uptick. What do you give the biggest credit to for the AEW turnaround?
Well, it's funny you mentioned like, oh yeah, it's what they do on pay-per-views. And I've seen the social media where it's like, hey, this was their best one ever. I will admit I'm awful at the like remembering show to show like, oh yeah, this was really good, because they're all really good. Yes, there have been a couple where it's like, all right, maybe there were some slow parts we could have taken out. This was not one of them. Like, yeah, there's still some critiques where it's like, all right, maybe we didn't need a 30-minute stadium stampede. But it still was an amazing show. That's what these shows are. I mean,
maybe we didn't need a 30-minute one, but I'm glad we got it. Like, it was still a lot of fun. Like, the stadium stampede is such a ridiculous concept. Yes. And you go back and look at, like, I had seen on social media from 2 years ago, like somebody had posted from 2 years ago, when I can't remember which one of the Young Bucks like got on the mic, because like Final Countdown just kept playing over and over and over, and he's like, this cost me $200K every time it plays, we're out of budget, turn off the music, damn it, right? Like, it's just, it's the most outrageous and ridiculous thing in pro wrestling. It's hard to keep up. I don't know how it is. I haven't been there in person for a stadium stampede, so I don't know what the in-person experience is like, but at home, like, it is just beautiful chaos. That again, if you take too seriously, sure, you can be like, oh, what is this? But that's most things in pro wrestling, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, it was a really good pay-per-view. And I guess where I give credit is, I don't know if Tony's listening to more people, if he's actually leaning into some of the veteran and voices that he has in the back, right? Because even at the low points, I think of AEW, like, you could point to one or two things that were pretty good. Like, Bryan Danielson's entire run was really good because you knew Danielson was involved. He was going to have a say in how the story progressed, and that was always going to be a pretty good thing. We also certainly, I mean, we talked about the Death Riders and how that kind of bogged down everything for a while. And the turnaround, I would say, started when Hangman, you know, went over Mox last year at All In, and we've kind of been slowly ticking up since. But it's storytelling in every department, right? Like, AEW pay-per-views have always been the bedrock because you knew it was going to be good wrestling.
Yes.
Now it's good wrestling with good storytelling, right? With compelling stories that they're telling. And it's not just like, oh, they're telling one decent story going into this pay-per-view. No, there's a lot of through lines and a lot of good stories going into each and every pay-per-view that even elevates it even more. And I think that's what I give the biggest key to, is they have found that marriage that we've talked to with so many people about. Again, check out the YouTube page with all the different interviews we've done over the years here on GKW, where so many people talk about, yes, we want, you know, obviously the wrestling's important, but we want to have a really good storyline going into these big matches that we have. And I think AEW has done a pretty good job of creating through lines, of creating a lot of interesting dynamics between, because that was the other thing they did. Oh, this story is siloed here, this story is siloed here. And now everything kind of interacts with each other, and you end up having through lines through your weekly TV shows, and you have interesting storylines that build throughout the course of a pay-per-view as well.
But that's the thing to me is, yes, there have been some of those improvements. They still have had some of those bright spots. We've had those shows, and it's almost deja vu with the fact that we have Forbidden Door coming up. We're like, hey, AEW's hot. Then Forbidden Door happens, we're like, oh, now it's sort of cooling down a little bit. To me, the biggest difference is just how different they are than the competition. And I know WWE is going to say, hey, we're not competition. But as we just watched a WrestleMania have what felt like 40 minutes of wrestling and 2 hours of commercials, it makes AEW stand out that much more when you have 5 hours of just straight wrestling. It is exhausting. It is a long night. It is a run, but it is so vastly different than just watching commercials in WWE that I think it's helping the positive vibes right now.
Well, and that's what the company was at the start too, right? And WWE, to their credit, came back to doing a lot more wrestling at their shows. And now it's kind of, by doing what WWE did in the mid to late 2010s, that's what opened the door for AEW to even exist, right? Where you can have the tagline, "We're the best wrestle." And you have, again, you're just so vastly different. And, you know, again, WWE started having more wrestling, and now they've, again, for whatever reason, on their pay-per-views, their PLEs, whatever. Like, again, we've got Clash in Italy. We're going to be talking about that coming up this weekend. Once again, it's a five-match card. Now, it's a stacked five-match card, but there's a lot of times where those five matches, it's not a stacked card, right? In these non-WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble cards. So they having that difference, I think, is always going to be an advantage to AEW when they can, because it helps them stand out more. Hey, here's where we're different. If you're sick and tired of watching more commercials than wrestling in your major shows, we're over here putting on banger after banger. And for whatever reason, giving a lot of it free on TV, did it again yesterday. But that's who the company is. And when they can stay true to that and then add to what I was saying, add the storytelling aspect to it, you can get a really compelling pro wrestling show.
Yeah. I think back to that first AEW presser where they said, hey, we want that lapsed fan, the fan that when WWE became all of pro wrestling, that said, all right, you know what? Pro wrestling isn't for me. I was one of those people. Like, as WWE was the only show in town, I was like, I don't really enjoy this as much. And I started finding the Ring of Honors or the waking up at 6 a.m. to watch the New Japan shows, things like that. And I think AEW can pull some of those people. We've talked about it. We don't really care about the numbers, and the numbers are probably never going to be comparable. And honestly, they're not even going to be needed to be comparable because we don't know what's real and what's not anymore with all the streaming stuff. But there is a gap closing. There are vibes going right now with AEW where, like, all right, this is a legit number two, and that's because of how different they are.
Yeah, and I don't know what the future of AEW holds. Obviously, they're going through the merger stuff. And that's the other thing. Like, you see these stories planted of like, oh, yeah, they're going to want to get rid of AEW. Well, is that actually, like, that story seemed like it was planted within WWE, like, right? Like, they were, like, somebody from higher up, kind of like maybe the Ludwig Kaiser story may be planted. Who the hell knows? Again, that's part of pro wrestling. You don't know what's real and what's not. But as long as they're strong, right? Like, as long as they continue to put on these great pay-per-views, they continue to do solid numbers, whatever they are. Like, I have no idea what last week's numbers are, last night's numbers.
I did see buy rates for Sunday, again, up from every pay-per-view. Over 200,000 people bought that show.
Yeah.
It was a sold out show. Like, there are people consuming the product right now.
Like, there's going to be a home somewhere for AEW. Like, somebody is going to, if TNA can get on AMC, like, there's always going, I guess that's what I'm not really worried about. Correct. Okay, let's say whatever happens at the end of this merger, which is still, again, a ways away from finally being finalized, and who knows what that new company looks like, if they want to be involved with pro wrestling. Like, AEW is good business right now. Like, you can find, you're going to find a television deal, I think, for AEW, especially with the connections the cons have. And again, as long as you're riding this wave of momentum, like, AEW is going to be, are they ever going to overtake WWE? Probably not, but it's a good alternative. And again, when in a time where TKO is cutting and offering 50% pay decreases to people, and some are sticking, keeping around, others like the New Day are not taking them and leaving. Like, having good alternative options as a pro wrestling fan is always a good thing, which is, again, why I've never understood the tribalism that exists online with some pro wrestling fans. Because I try to watch as much as I can, and there's a lot of content out there. I don't watch TNA as much, right? I don't watch NXT as much because there's just so much damn content out there. But, like, it's good to have good pro wrestling no matter where it is. And who cares if it's WWE, if it's AEW, if it's fun and it's a good, compelling storyline, I'm going to get a good match out of it. I don't care where it's happening. And I think that's a really good thing for pro wrestling. Like, having more options is always a good thing.
Completely agree. And even AEW, like, the way they're mixing things up right now, like, we're going to talk about later, MJF being a young star. Like, you have MJF at the top of your card. You have a Jack Perry versus Mark Davis match. But then you also had the 5 seconds of flash photography last night. Like, you had the 5 second pose with Cage and Cope. Like, you get all that stuff. And even that, an opportunity to showcase the dogs and them look legit. And they're going to get a good match out of Cage and Cope. Like, it is such an awesome mix every Wednesday. Saturdays is for the psychos, and then it just delivers once a month on these pay-per-views. Like, Saturday, it's what it is right now.
Saturday is for the psychos.
It is.
You're not wrong. That's because that's exactly what's going on Saturday nights on Collision, which again is now just like an hour because you got playoffs, yeah, hockey, and all that good stuff.
But we're almost through it.
So you got 3 hours of AEW last night. But again, there's just like, for example, like the way they started off the show last night, going, hey, here's something that happened after the pay-per-view. And now you have the through line of, oh, because we know Kenny and Ospreay have this relationship. Then Mox comes in, overhears a lot of the conversation. And it just creates interesting, you know, like that wasn't a big promo segment for Mox or, you know, it was 2-3 minutes. But now you've now you have created something that's compelling that we're going to watch play out of, okay, what happens with, I mean, is Ospreay going to be a heel? Is he going to kind of continue to toe this line of being this tweener? What's going to happen with Kenny Omega? Like it creates a lot of interest around what's going on with Ospreay on his presumptive rise to winning this tournament, winning the Owen Hart, and then getting a chance at the AEW World Championship and MJF at the end of the summer.
And then to that point, I think that story is the perfect example of how well this story's been told. It's been what, most of 2026 where we said, hey, the path is we go to Wembley, MJF drops the title to Ospreay. It'll be a great moment. It'll be awesome for the company. We knew we were getting there, but we've taken so many twists and turns. We never saw Darby winning the title during this run. And even now, like I felt like social media this weekend, it's like, you know what? Maybe it should be Kenny. Like maybe it should be Kenny and Ospreay at Wembley. And you plant that seed last night. Like there's so many different angles and we're getting different shows and pay-per-views before that it's intriguing and keeping you hooked as opposed to like, all right, I'll just watch in August when I know it's going to be MJF and Ospreay, which it still probably is. But the way we're getting there has been fascinating right now.
Yeah, and look, I was wrong about and I think I said this last week, I'm really curious. I wish Jay Hood was here because we were on the same page of, do we really need this Darby Allin run? Did we need it? No, I'm glad we had it.
Right.
And again, we're going to talk about MJF now being a 3-time champ. Like that puts him on a different list, and you were able to tell some different redemption stories. Like, and even at the end, like, do I really need a Kevin Knight heel turn at the end of this pay-per-view? But then he, you know, after the backstage segment, he's the first one out of the gate as part of the live show and cuts a fun promo that sets up him and Speedball. And there's some intrigue there as they continue. They obviously believe in Kevin Knight and they've been pushing him. And this gives him a little bit of a different, you know, shine a little bit of a different light on him as he continues to be one of those young guys they try to build up. So I question, like, what do we need this? And it turned out pretty good last night. And I think they're going to continue to do a good job with whatever story they ultimately tell with Kevin Knight as he tries to become a world champion someday in this company.
Yeah, and also that elevates that title. We've talked about, yes, they have too many titles. The TNT title, at one point, I think you could say, was their number two title. I don't even know how to answer that right now. But now you elevate that and you've got something there. You've got the Okada stuff or the Takeshita stuff. Like, they're doing a good job telling a lot of different stories right now.
Yeah, and again, when you have these big factions like the Don Callis family, then he's kind of got his fingers in everything, and that kind of creates a through line and creates some intrigue in other stories everywhere. And again, then they set up, what, 3 different challengers last night, potentially for MJF in the meantime, right? You have Briscoe come out, Roosh comes out, and then Andrade cuts a backstage promo.
And then even Kevin Knight says, hey, I'm not teaming with you, I want the belt. Like, so still keeping it front of line, like, hey, everyone's coming for this title.
Yeah, so you've got 4, right? Yeah. You've got 4 that you had potentially set up there last night. So it's been a lot of fun watching that turnaround, and I hope that they continue to ride this wave, even though what we've had 2 more pay-per-views now because they added Redemption.
They added Redemption. We got Forbidden Door at the end of June, and then, so that'll get
so 2 more pay-per-views before we get to the big show at Wembley at the end of the summer. Should be a lot of fun. All right, let's go ahead and dive into the other top 3 stories this week in the world of professional wrestling. We call it the 3 count here on GKW. Brian, what's number 1 this week?
2:00 Eastern this weekend. Clash in Italy, like you mentioned, a 5-match card, but 4 of them are title matches. Becky defends the women's IC title against Sol Ruka. Rhea defends the women's title against Jade Cargill. Cody defends the undisputed WWE title against Gunther. And Roman defends the world heavyweight title against Jacob Fatu in Tribal Combat. We saw no title changes at Saturday night's main event. Do we get it again this weekend? This is another WWE show with no title changes.
Kind of feels that way, right? I mean, I can't, as much as I would love for Gunther to take the championship off of Cody, doesn't, and again, it doesn't help that this is happening at 2 p.m. Eastern time on a Sunday.
And, well, Cody Gunther, one of the ESPN matches. So two of the five will air on ESPN.
That's right, yep.
In the middle of the day, Cody Gunther, Rhea Jade are those two matches.
So
it, I don't know if that changes anything.
I can't imagine that they're doing a title change on ESPN. Like, it again, the fact that it's on ESPN doesn't change the fact that it's happening in the middle of a day, in the middle of Sunday, right? Like, yes. At 2 o'clock, and this is like, maybe if this was a pay-per-view in February, sure. When a good chunk of the country, I know you don't ever have to deal with this down in Florida, Brian, but like, the weather has finally turned up here in the Midwest. I want to be outside at 2 o'clock. Well, for us, it's going to be 1 o'clock, but I'm going to want to be outside at 1 o'clock Central Time when this thing is getting started on Sunday. I am probably not going to watch this live. I am going to want to be outside enjoying the great weather that we now finally have. And there's a good chunk of the country that's dealing with that. So I can't imagine that Jacob Fatu is going to go over Roman Reigns in the middle of the day when this is, again, this has like, oh, I'll just go back and watch it all over again. Even though it's a stacked card, I love this card.
Yes.
It doesn't change the fact that Clash in Italy in the past, or the Clash series, whenever they've done this, has just kind of been, as we've talked about, a glorified house show.
Cody has talked about how it's a big deal because they're touring Europe and this, that, but Cody also the ultimate salesman. Logically, I can make the case for Gunther. I agree. It just feels weird. Sol Ruka, maybe? Like, they just worked Saturday. It was a very weird, quick match. The DQ finish. Like, do they pull the trigger already and give her a belt?
So what? So her first win on the main roster is going to be a championship win?
Yeah, she won Saturday. It was by DQ, but she won a Saturday night's main event.
Yeah, I guess. I feel like the only thing, and I mean, we talked about it last week. I don't know if it's a surprise. Like, the only thing I can see kind of being an upset would be Brock over Oba to set up a third match at SummerSlam, right? So then you just have Cody, Rhea, Roman, and Becky all. But I guess because you already did the DQ finish, I don't know how you keep Becky and Sol going.
Right. Like, Becky winning again, it's like, all right, Sol's obviously not at her level. Like, how do we continue to look at her as a legit threat?
Yeah. So maybe she wins. I can't imagine they do another DQ.
I mean, Maxine got a couple weeks with it. Like, maybe they just look at it that way. Like, all right, like, congrats.
Well, but that's what they've been doing. They've just, like, Becky grabs it, and then they hot shot it to Maxine or AJ, and now they're going to do that. Like, they've already told this story twice. Like, we're just going to run it back with Sol?
It sort of feels like that, yes.
Okay, all right. I mean, I agree with you. Like, of the four, that one feels the most likely, even though I wouldn't, like, bet any money on it.
Right.
Because there's no way, like, the least likely to change is Rhea and Jade, in my mind.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And I thought this weekend was a good showcase of Jade. Actually, one of my matches of the week was that six woman from Saturday night's main event, where I thought it was an awesome way to showcase Jade, where she's there, she gets to finish, she pins Rhea clean, but she didn't have to do a lot of the work. So another opportunity for her with Rhea. I agree, I think it's probably least likely. And then Roman. If we go most to least likely to drop, I guess I go Becky, Cody, yep. Roman, Rhea.
Probably, because I can't picture like Roman showing up and acknowledging Jacob Fatu,
right?
Right. So
Fatu's moment having to be essentially on tape delay, because I think majority of people are going to be with you, where it's like, I don't need to watch this live. I can watch it back tonight, like after the kids are in bed, or after this, after that, when the sun's down. Like, watching that first ever moment of Fatu winning the world title being a big moment shouldn't be a tape delayed moment. Like, it should be live and everyone's tuning in at the same time.
Yeah. So that's, and again, like, I don't know, because it is a really good card. Like, and I am excited that WWE, again, there are times when we don't get any champion. We have three of the four top championships in this company being defended, the two on the men's side and then the women's world champion, or the women's championship, not the women's world championship, but just the women's championship. Like, that's exciting. That's great. And I'm happy for the fans in Italy. I'm sure it's going to be a hot crowd. But again, because I don't think any of these changes are actually happening, it just makes me go, okay, I'm curious to see it. I'm not really curious.
But that's the thing. Like you said, like the house, like that's what house shows were. Like, it was like, oh, look, world title match coming to your town. It's like, all right, cool. Like, I think one of the last ones I went to down in Miami, it was Cody and KO in a cage match. Awesome, fun, but like, Cody's not dropping the belt. And I think that's sort of where we're at this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So looking at, so last year's was Clash in Paris. Mm-hmm. We actually had six matches. Rollins defeated Punk, Jey Uso, and LA Knight for the World Heavyweight Championship. So he retained. Cena defeated Logan Paul. Rusev defeated Sheamus by submission in a good old-fashioned Donnybrook.
Okay.
Becky defeated Nikki Bella for the IC, the women's IC. The Wyatt Six beat out the Street Profits for the tag team champ match. The tag team championships, and then Roman defeated Bronson Reed. So, no title changes last year, and just three of the six had a championship on the line.
All right, so yeah, similar stuff. And looking right now at, where is this from? Bet Online. Yeah, Bet Online. The odds: Roman -500 to retain, Rhea -900 to retain. Sol Ruka -350 to win. She is the betting favorite.
Oh, wow. A pretty heavy favorite.
Yeah.
-350.
Cody and Gunther both -120.
Oh, so they're looking at that as a coin flip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just got to pay a little vig to the house there with the -120. But that's actually shocking to me. Well, because again, we've talked about this when it comes to that. Like, Cody doesn't need a win. Like, Cody's Cody. Cody's the made man in this company, right? Like, his future Hall of Famer. And it just feels like there's a lot of momentum behind Gunther. So Gunther winning keeps the momentum with him. Gunther losing kind of takes some of the shine off of everything you've done over the last almost 12 months.
Look at it different if it is happening on ESPN? So I guess I think, too, you're hanging out at the sports bar, ESPN's on the TV like it is always, and you see Gunther beating Cody and raising the belt. Like, does that make it a bigger moment?
I mean, yes, because it's on ESPN. I don't know if that entices you to sign up for ESPN Unlimited to watch the rest of it. If, because I'm trying to think, what have they? I mean, I guess they did put Brock and Oba on regular TV, right? The first time around.
Happened.
Yep, that's where the retirement happened. That was a part of Mania.
You had the ladder match night two.
Yeah. So they have had, I mean, again, that's different because it's Mania and a lot of those matches were pretty big, especially night two. But you just haven't had a lot of those. So I guess they haven't been scared to put big moments up, but we haven't seen a title change yet, I guess, on ESPN.
Yeah. And I guess Gunther can play that up like, oh, I'm on ESPN winning the title or this or that. Like, I guess that's something.
Yeah. Oh, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's, yeah. But at least, yeah, I would prefer to see Gunther win. I'm not expecting it. I guess that's the way to put it.
That's fair.
What do we got at number two this week?
All right, so you have those four title matches. You have Brock and Oba. What match steals the show this weekend? And also, I guess, who's main eventing?
Well, I'm assuming Tribal Combat main events.
So Brock's the middle of the card?
I mean, how do you justify putting Brock and Oba last?
It's the biggest rematch of all time when you have another rematch on the show that is for the title in Fatu and Roman.
You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, so one of those is for the championship.
Uh-huh.
Roman's going to be in the middle of the card?
Roman or Brock is. Someone is.
One of these guys is technically not an active competitor. He's still insisting that he's retired, Brian. He's still retired, he says.
Roman is sort of on the line of that also. Like, he just
Roman's been showing up. Roman's been there. I've always missed one show. I think he's like he's been there most of the time.
All right, I guess you give him credit for that, but it's still, I think, long term, these two are probably similar in terms of appearances. That is an odd decision. I do feel bad for Becky and Sol, who's going to be between those two.
I mean, to me, if they actually give, if we're talking about stealing the show, that's the one I think has the possibility to do it, because we know how good Sol can be. Becky, she gets so much credit for her character work. And I don't want to make this seem like I want to take away from that.
Yeah.
I don't, because her character work is fantastic. It's top notch in the company. But I think that takes some shine off of her in-ring work, like to the point where I think her in the ring is a little underrated. So especially when you put her with someone as talented as Sol, like, and she's going to be able to shepherd a younger, more athletic superstar through what could be a pretty good match if they give it time, which I feel like is always the qualifier now in WWE. Is if this match gets time, that can steal the show. And that's what I think can happen. I think that one can absolutely steal the show. And it's probably the one we're talking about just because like everything else already has so much hype. And then if it's tribal combat, there's going to be bloodline shenanigans in the Roman Fatu match. Brock just doesn't go that long anymore. Right? Like if this was Brock even a 5 years ago and that match went anywhere between 10 and 15 minutes, like Big E would be getting excited about meaty men slapping meat. But Brock matches are just quick now, which is fine because they hit everything and it just becomes like this huge dopamine rush while they're doing it. And I think that match is going to be fine. But Sol and Becky, if given time, should steal the show.
So to me, like Brock and Oba, the hype is there. And it was universally praised the first time around to where I'm wondering, how do you top it? Especially if we think we're going to get a third one at SummerSlam. So I'm curious to see where that goes. And honestly, like, could this be a squash?
I think it could be. I think there's a possibility that exists. Yeah. Because then that's how you justify the third match, right? It's not Brock's, you know, getting by the skin of his teeth. It's Brock going out there and, oh, I am still the beast. I still need to be conquered. And that's that's the way you make a third match actually make sense, is Brock squashing.
That just sucks for Oba, which we talked about last week. It just sucks to kill his momentum. In terms to answer the question, I think it could be Roman and Fatu too. Like, they had a fun one at the last show, Backlash. Like, now you give them this. Yes, there's going to be shenanigans. There's going to be a bunch of interferences, this and that. But Fatu just continues to elevate his game, and I think it's another chance for him to sort of shine, whether he's the third match of the card or the main event spot again.
Like, that has to be, especially if it's a squash. Like, I don't think you can end the show with Brock standing tall.
Okay.
Right? Like, I think you want to end, again, if I'm going in this with the glorified house show mentality, yeah. Right? Like, you're going over there trying to put on a really good show for the European crowd that doesn't get these shows all the time. And you're hitting these different cities that, you know, you're only getting the opportunity to get over there once a year, once probably every other year, because they do different parts of Europe when they do the different tours. So I think you want to give the opportunity of everyone to go home happy with Roman raising the belt.
Sure.
Right?
I don't know. Like, it is a weird spot. Like, Roman or Oba being in the middle of the card, because you talk about watching it back. When you watch it back, it's not like, oh, I got to switch from ESPN to the app now and this and that. Like, you're watching it in one full show and fast-forwarding through some stuff. And one of them is going to be the middle of the card, which is just weird to see with those two involved.
But I mean, whatever, it's not always the indicator, but every time Roman's on Raw, it's the main event of Raw.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess it would be weird to then get to the pay-per-view and not have him going out there last.
That's fair. And I guess the squash makes more sense just coming out of, all right, switch over. We're going to do this. You're hyping it up. Like, get to the app now. Like, it's the next match. Like, a little makes more sense there, but I do hope somehow they can top Mania, because Mania was fun. They hit the spots. They did what they had to do. They played the hits. But now you got to do it again. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, to try to sup a third one. That's always the tough part, right? Because we didn't see, I think, the way it happened coming at Mania, right? Like, we thought certainly like Oba could and probably should and did win the match. But the way that they decided to do it was the fun part. Okay. Now you got to follow it up. And that sometimes can be the tough part of trying to figure that out.
That is true.
Number three this week.
We talked about MJF winning the world title this weekend, becoming the eighth person ever to have three world titles by the age of 30, joining a list that includes Luthez, The Rock, Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton, John Cena, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Kazuchika Okada. What is the career ceiling for MJF?
So first and foremost, how crazy is it that the 16-time world champ Ric Flair is not on this list?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have three by the time he was 30, and it ended up being probably more than 16, by the way. Like, 16 is the only recognized number by WWE. Like, I don't know what the actual number is for Rick. And this is where I wish we had J-Hood here today, because I'm sure J-Hood may be able to ballpark that. But that's a pretty sick list to be a part of.
Yeah.
for MJF. And again, I think then when you see this list and put it in the, okay, I guess it makes sense why they kind of did the quick go from MJF back to, because I don't know when MJF gets his fourth. I'm sure he will at some point. Again, assuming he ends up losing at All In at Wembley. But the career ceiling for MJF is Mr. AEW.
Okay.
The way we kind of looked at as Sting is like the WCW guy, right? Like, I guess when you think of WCW, at least for me, the first guy I think of is Sting.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Because, you know, Rick obviously was there for a long time. Goldberg had his, you know, big run there that was kind of short. You know, again, it's amazing how short that run was. Yes, the NWO, you know, certainly pushed it to a new level. But the through line and the consistency for WCW was always Sting.
That's fair. And, by the way, about 34, that first NWA world title.
Okay. Wow.
Which he then held for 2 years.
Well, and that's the thing about Rick and all the championships. He had like 2 year reigns in that. Right. Insane. So I think the career ceiling for MJF is when you say AEW, he ends up being the first guy you think of.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. And honestly, I think the only thing that can derail that is almost MJF being bored of wrestling. Like The Rock being on this list, The Rock should be Mr. WWE. He isn't. Like, he isn't the name you think of. Like, you think of Cena. I think you can work Orton in there also, because The Rock said, hey, I'm going to go do this Hollywood thing. And now he's the action hero of the, you know, our country right now. MJF could end up going down that path. Like, he's done a little bit of movies already. I think he's got another one coming out soon. He's the type to be like, all right, I don't need to do this till I'm 50. So that would be the only thing in my mind that could take him away from being the face of not just AEW, but really this generation of wrestling. Like, as more fans shift to AEW and as WWE fans, you know, their superstars are getting a lot older, MJF could be the face of this whole damn thing.
Well, and I mean, I said this earlier this year, and it's going to be obviously coming out soon. Like, I just don't know how MJF isn't number one on PWI 500 this year.
Yeah.
Which would be the first time that he would have that honor, right? Yeah. Like, and I think he is the best professional wrestler in the world right now. Like, and that's why I think he deserves to have that honor. And obviously everybody else on this list, you know, has gone through that. You know, I guess I don't know as much about Lou, you know, which maybe Jay Hood does, but everybody else on this list that we've seen, Lesnar, Orton, Cena, Knock, and Okada, like, they've had their runs kind of as almost looking at as the guy,
yeah,
in the world of pro wrestling at different points in time. And I think that's what MJF is right now. And I feel like, okay, you've broken, he's now kind of completely broken through of, yes, he's always called himself the generational talent. It just took us, you know, it just, the resume always takes a while to catch right up. And I know that's part of the heel gimmick, but he truly is that, where he can be, there's a very good chance that we're looking at him as one of the best wrestlers of the 2020s and the 2030s.
Yeah, because there's really no holes in his game. Like, to compare him to a Cena, like, Cena is good character stuff, but we've made the jokes about the ring stuff, the five moves of doom. Yeah, like, and we've seen Cena can take it to that level. Like, we've seen some of those matches. I think the U.S. Open Challenge was almost like, hey, look, I can do this.
And well, the first person I thought to push him was Punk.
Yeah.
You know, when you had the Punk, you know, some of the Punk matches before you got to the U.S. Open Challenge. And then, again, Cena's just going crazy with that U.S. Right. Open Challenge with some of the great wrestlers he went there. But kind of showcased, oh, yeah, by the way, I can do this pro wrestling thing in the ring.
Right, but that's it. MJF does it in the ring. He does it on the mic. He's doing all of it to the point where you can put him in the ring with anyone. Like, it's random as hell. It's a him and Roosh world title match next Wednesday on free TV. Not necessary, but it's going to deliver, and it's going to be a fun match. And, like, he just does it all right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what that weakness would be. Yeah. I mean, because his storytelling, his attention to detail, his mic work, it's all there, man. Like, it's just all there. Like,
and even to the point where we've talked about he's the best heel in the business, when we saw the little glimpse of him as a babyface, that even worked. Like, when he was doing the Cole stuff and doing the comedy stuff, like, that was working.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, the musical number he did with Jericho, like, he's got the range to kind of do whatever you need to
kick.
Do.
How over that was! Like, that stuff was over. Like,
it was so over.
Yes.
If we were to, and we've done this before on GKW, if we were to have a draft, you're starting a wrestling company, and you know everybody's available. Is he the number one pick right now?
I think so, because like,
or would you go with like, cause to me right now, the picks would probably be in some order. I'm just trying to think of like the top five. If you're starting a wrestling company right now, it's probably him, Oba, Cody,
Rhea
and Roman.
Yeah. But to me, building around a heel, like we talk about the AEW turnaround, it's the chasing of the heel. Like MJF is the best heel in pro wrestling right now. Like as good as the Bloodline was, like people didn't hate Roman the way they hate MJF. Like every part he does well. And I think that's someone you can build and do so many different things with.
Well, but here's the thing. Like, people don't actually hate MJF. Like, I feel, so he goes out there last night and where were they last night?
Philly.
So they're in Philly. And I feel like they're booing more out of respect. Like, you're a heel, I'm supposed to be. And he was getting those boos before he took the cracks at the 76ers and the process and all those different things he said in his promo last night. But I feel like he's getting booed because, like, if let's say they were doing a show here in Milwaukee, like I would boo MJF, but I'm doing it because I respect him, because I also love MJF.
Right. And maybe that's just the fan bases then, because in WWE, we don't see heels get heat because, you know, you want to cheer everyone, you want to do the catchphrases, things like that.
Well, and he has the catchphrase. Like, if he was in WWE, he would probably get cheered.
100%. Yes.
He would get cheered.
The catchphrase, all that sort of stuff would work. So maybe it's just that. Maybe it is as simple as the crowd thing, and that just sort of elevates him a little bit more. But, like, the guy gets it. I saw him posting, I think it was today or yesterday, he has full copyright of his name, of MJF, of Maxwell Jacob Friedman. He's like, oh, they care about us over here. Like, he can do whatever the hell he wants in this business right now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. 100%. Yeah. And he is, again, he's at the top.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm with you. Like, the ceiling is as high as he wants it to be. If he wants to continue to do pro wrestling. And I think he does, but you never know. Like, you know, he's done some insane matches already.
Right.
Like, if he decides I don't want to have my body get beat up and just kind of parachute into pro again, like he maybe even if he becomes the AEW version of The Rock where he goes off and does some Hollywood stuff and just parachutes in every now and then, like, I don't think that's a bad thing for him either, because AEW has established a lot of upper end talent as well. Again, we mentioned the four guys that are already in line to potentially challenge him. And that doesn't include Ospreay, doesn't include Kenny Omega, John Moxley, like the usual suspects that we see at the top of the card for AEW.
And I think one of the biggest testaments, if we look at this list, again, Luthez, The Rock, Brock, Orton, Cena, Nakamura, Okada, we look at this list, put MJF in it, and it's not one of those like, all right, which one doesn't belong here? And this is with us knowing the full career of everyone else already on this list. Like, we look at it and we're like, oh yeah, he belongs with everyone on this list right now, which is an insane thing to say for 30 years old.
Yeah. I'm trying to think the next time WWE has somebody on this list.
Whew. Oba, how old is Oba actually?
Yeah, I feel like Oba might already he's closing in on might already be 30. Yeah, like I don't know, because the thing is, if when I'm speaking this into existence, when Oba wins a world championship at SummerSlam, like he's probably gonna hold on to it for a long time. Like I can't imagine him dropping it and picking up three title reigns by the time he's 30.
So he turned 28 late April. Is there a world where WWE is petty enough? He wins it at SummerSlam, random drop, win it back the next week, and then you give him another one. Like, hey, look, I'm on this list also.
Yes, because, I mean, basically that's what AEW did. Now, they gave it in an entertaining way to get him 2-3 by 30 because of the way they did it with Darby Allin. But, I mean, and I couldn't criticize it because, again, we saw an entertaining way for AEW to do it with Darby to give him that kind of Mick Foley-esque moments. But yeah, I could see them doing that just to be like, oh, hey, yeah, we can develop young stars too.
Totally the plan the whole time. We knew what we were doing.
So yeah, I think they could certainly do that with Oba, especially because he's 28. Because that's the thing, like Trick's already 30.
Right.
And
he's older.
Yeah.
There's no
I mean,
one
Javon. Javon's young.
Okay, yeah.
Javon's really young. So Javon would have that opportunity.
But like, yes, I agree, but I just feel like still the WWE style. Yeah, 22. God, he's so
young. That's what I'm saying. Like he's got 8 years, man. Like he's that could go a number of different ways. I'm hoping it goes one way.
Right.
Like at 22, being on the main roster already is a huge, huge step.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we usually don't see somebody that young. On a WWE roster at that point.
Braun? Braun's 28 also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Braun. Braun's nowhere near a world champion.
No, which is insane to say, looking back at a year ago.
Right? Right? So wow. I think Javon could have, again, just because he's 22 years, because he's 22 years old. I think he might have that chance to potentially join that list. All right, what do we got at news and notes this week?
All right, I mentioned Bron Breakker. Well, the vision injury history continues to not be good. Logan Paul, the latest, suffering a torn tricep Saturday during Saturday night's main event. Says he had surgery while awake because he wanted to feel it all. Doctors say timeline 6 months, but he says he expects to be back sooner.
Yeah, I believe he was giving credit to his sports drink as a reason why he would be back sooner. So great heel work there because, yeah, there's no way he actually did the surgery while awake.
That poor group and all of their injuries. And
like, Paul Heyman is going to have an injury at some point, right? Like, he's just going to, like, going up to the ring, like, step on something wrong and just roll an ankle that's going to keep him out or something.
They even wrote him off TV for a little bit when they put him through the table. Like,
that's true.
It's insane. Bron Breakker apparently will defend the tag titles with theory that, you know, they worked that in.
Well, and that made the most sense.
Yeah.
Like the way that Heyman's like, oh, I made sure it was the vision and like the Freebird rule already exists. So that's an easy way to explain the vision keeping the tag team titles and Bron Breakker just being the tag team champ of Austin Theory. That made a ton of sense. Made all the sense in the world.
Speaking of tag team wrestling, Body Slam reporting FTR approaching the option year of the extension that they signed with AEW. Reports say there is early interest in the WWE to bring them back. Back in May of 2023, Cash Wheeler said he does not expect them to still be full-time after this deal expires.
I can't imagine them going back to WWE. I just can't.
Like,
and I know a lot of the issues that they had with the dumb comedy stuff that they were doing was Vince, right? So maybe there's a different relationship there because of the way Hunter treated them. And again, they had banger matches in NXT.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a trust level there with Hunter, the way we've seen with other people. But, I mean, WWE still doesn't really care about tag team wrestling.
No. Like, they would be the Motor City Machine Guns. We're like, they're the shiny new toy right off the jump. It's like, oh, yeah, tag team wrestling. And then it's a couple months like, all right, you know, I think we're good here.
Like, just trying to help Johnny Gargano out backstage. Like, that's what that turns into, right? So,
what is the end game with that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Truly don't know. I don't know if they know.
All right. Yeah, I guess that's fair.
But, you know, again, I enjoyed, was that this week or last week, where Sammy's just back there venting to Gargano as he's just laying there.
It was the last couple of weeks, because this week is when Gargano then knocked the water bottle over. That Sammy
knocked
the hit. Yes.
So, again, I don't know what the end game is. I've kind of enjoyed it. At some point, they do have to come up with something else for him. I just feel bad for his wife.
That is accurate. Finally, news and notes. Former WWE writer Chris Dunn on a podcast revealed that WWE almost relaunched a new NWO during the COVID shows. He says, quote, the pitch was Sheamus, Cesaro, Nakamura, and Lars Sullivan. It was really close to happening. I forget which legendary NWO member was supposed to fly to Orlando to introduce this new NWO. It wasn't X-Pac. Essentially, they landed, didn't pass the COVID test. Kevin Nash said on social, it was not him or Scott Hall.
Well, and this writer, if it was supposed to be Hulk, I don't feel like you forget. Like, oh, I don't remember who it was supposed to be. Like, if it was supposed to be Hulk Hogan, I feel like you would remember that detail, right?
Because
it's Hulk Hogan. So we're kind of out of legendary members of the NWO at that point. And I know everybody was in NWO at some point in WCW, but that doesn't mean you were a legendary member of NWO.
Bischoff?
Like, again, so when they relaunched the LWO, at least Ray was around.
Right.
Like, Ray was then a part of the reboot that they did. Made sense. Like, if you're bringing in, I don't even know who you would bring in at this point. Like, random.
Scott Norton.
Yeah. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, can you imagine the field day that Nash would have had if they would have brought in just some random dude to like, yeah, this is the new NWO.
Yeah, like, Horace Hogan. They'd bring him in and call it a day.
And also, like, there was a cool factor to the NWO. There was a cool factor to Nash and Hall. And because Hogan was Hogan and did the heel turn, like, that kind of got rid of some of the corny stuff he was doing. And there was a cool factor, especially the three of them, in the early days of the NWO. And this isn't meant to be a shot. Because I love Knock and Sheamus is a future Hall of Famer and Cesaro is just such a good in-ring worker. When I think of those three, and especially Lars, like there's no like, oh, this is a cool group. Like there's no coolness factor to those four being together.
It's the random, and I don't remember the group name when they were like with the League of Nations or something.
Yes, yes.
Like that's what this is. Like,
oh my God, I forgot about the League of Nations. Oh my God, that's exactly what that was because they were already in a group at one point. Right. The League of Nations. They just Rusev. That's all they were missing.
Okay, yeah, I'm trying to remember who the hell was it. Del Rio, Barrett, Rusev, and Sheamus. That's what this is. But they'd put them in NWO shirts.
That wouldn't have sold t-shirts the way they think that it would have, right? Like that would not have gotten the job done.
They formed early December, broke up late April. So hell of a run from the League of Nations.
Good thing whoever came in tested positive for COVID. Like this is one of those signs from the wrestling gods. We're like, no, maybe we shouldn't do this, guys. Maybe we shouldn't be, you know, And again, I'm trying to think, like, who would even...
Yeah, who is the Hogan? Like, who's the leader?
Yeah, I don't even know. Yeah, I'm Sheamus, I guess, by default, because he's the former WWE World Champ there.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Yeah, I don't even know. That's tough. Like now I'm not even trying to think of like in that era, like who would have actually made a good NWO reboot. I mean, you could have
Cena. It would have to be Cena. Like we did the Mania match, the Firefly.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. It would have to be Cena. Cena would have to be Hogan.
Yeah.
I don't even know who Nash and Hall would have been at that point. Like, I think you could have done it with Roman because again, this I'm assuming would have been before you started the Bloodline saga when Roman came back.
Right.
Because Roman could have easily done it. I could see him being cool, looking good in an NWO t-shirt.
Roman and Rollins being Hall and Nash, Cena being Hogan.
Yeah. Yeah, that could have worked. That could have worked.
Yeah. But, you know, it could have been Sheamus, Cesaro, and Lars. Same thing.
Yeah, League of Nations. God bless America.
I don't think they're a part of it.
What do you have for your matches of the week?
All of Sunday night. I guess we have to pick a two from there. I loved the I Quit match, FTR, Cage and Cope.
Yep.
And Swerve and Bandito. Like, he stood on another human and then kicked him in the head. Standing on that human.
The reversal also that he had. I mean, again, I have been on the record of the 21 plex. Like, yes. Not a big fan of that move. It does look cool. Like, I don't want to take that away, but just like the setup for it, usually when someone's just like standing there clearly in position. But the way he reversed it, the way Swerve reversed it. Yeah. That was pretty outrageous. I mean, MJF and Darby was fantastic. The whole damn thing.
Everything. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Even, like, the little stuff of, like, the pre-show. Like, the Foley thing. Like, Foley on the mic. Like, just every part of Sunday night was so damn good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, is there anything that you really like that happened outside of Double or Nothing?
I enjoyed the women's six-man from Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yep, Charlotte, you had mentioned that. That was, to me, clearly the highlight of Saturday Night's Main Event.
And it still was a good show. It was a lot of wrestling, which was different for WWE. SmackDown randomly, a couple really good matches. Melo and Trick and Sammy and Cody.
Why are we giving Melo and Trick away?
Right.
I feel like we could have built that up for Clash or SummerSlam. Maybe we still will. But, hey, again, AEW gives away these great matches on TV all the time. But, yes, Melo and Trick, because, again, they had a pretty storied rivalry in NXT.
Yes.
Like, you can heat that up at any time and throw them in the ring, and I think you're going to have a good match.
And then even the main event, Sammy and Cody, like, those two can go, and it was just, you know, minimal outside stuff besides the Gunther stuff. So it was a good main event.
Yeah. No, that was a good main event. Last night, one of the quarterfinal matches. Now I'm blanking.
Jack Perry and Mark Davis and
Brody.
Claudio and Brody.
Claudio and Brody. That was Yeah, the one from, and again, that's nothing against Mark Davis and right. and because that would and Jack because that was also good. But again, you could run back Claudio and Brody every week, and I think I'd be fine with it.
Also, I think like we always make the joke about who's Jannetty of a tag team, and we've seen the breakout of Kyle Fletcher. Mark Davis is really good, also.
Oh yeah,
like we might not need to have a discussion at one point about like the tag teams were both of them. Like there is no Jannetty. Like it's starting to feel like that.
Well, the Jannetty is the other one. Like who's always injured because it was Mark Davis and there was somebody else as well.
So how about Doyle who came back Doyle. Last night?
Yes, Doyle. Yes.
Who honestly I thought was Mark Davis.
Yeah, because they look alike. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, it's weird to have him out here early before he has a match later. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, Aussie Open, quite a team that might go down history-wise.
Yeah, fantastic tag team, man. But yeah, we got a lot of really good wrestling, even outside of Double or Nothing. Again, check out all our past interviews, everything we've done here. GKW, check it out, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. A lot of great past interviews, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more really good interviews coming up that we always post in full on our YouTube page. Again, we're past now Double or Nothing. We've got Clash in Paris coming up. We've got a lot more to react to in terms of the Owen Hart Invitational that's happening over in AEW. We'll react to it all next week right here on GKW.